Well, our lesson this afternoon will pick up very closely with Terry's. It's almost better that we kind of had to move lessons around because of the weather, because the two sermons today really fit well. The idea of the living waters, the statement that Jesus made. And now in John, the 8th chapter, verse 12, Jesus is going to make another statement to the scribes and Pharisees. He says, "I am the light of the world." And I think there's more to it than what might actually meet the eye, at least in the eyes of the Pharisees. I think it had a whole lot more meaning, and hopefully after we study this for a little while, we'll understand. For a text, John chapter 8, verse 12. "Then Jesus spoke to them again, saying, 'I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life.'" For a little while this afternoon, we're going to talk about the light of the world, the statement that Jesus made there on the Feast of Tabernacles in the city of Jerusalem many, many years ago. Before we go further, let's go to God in the Word of prayer. Well, I've always wanted to do a sermon like this. We're going to start in Genesis 1 and 1, and we're going to end in Revelation chapter 22. So we're going to go from the first book of the Bible to the last book. Don't worry, we're going to skip around a lot in the middle, or else we'd be here a while. But Genesis 1 and 1, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And then God said, 'Let there be light,' and there was light." In the first three verses of the Bible, we're introduced to two really important concepts that are going to be carried throughout really the Bible. And that is the idea of water and the idea of light. And we go into the Garden of Eden. We talk about this river that goes through. And after Adam and Eve were expelled, there was cherubs with fire that were going to prevent people from going to the garden. And then we go to the nation of Israel wandering around. And Moses had to speak to the rock to get water to come out. But there was also fire, if you remember, that led the children of Israel in their wanderings, the fire that led them at night. So this concept of fire and water, or light and water, is just found throughout the Scriptures. And it's going to take us all the way to the book of Revelation. And what we're studying from this evening, John the 8th chapter, there is a feast that is going on. And Terry brought some of it out this morning. I'm going to try to hit the rest. It's this Feast of Tabernacles. Now, John is very, very specific and particular on when this was occurring and what day. And I'm glad he is, because it really adds a lot of context to our study. On John 7 and 37, on the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, "If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink." I don't really know that I'm not 100% sure of this. I think this last day is the seventh day of the feast. The Feast of Tabernacles was 8 days. The first seven were days of celebration. The last day, as we're going to see here in a second, was a solemn day of worship. And so the events that occurred with the water, and I don't know that that's the last day. A lot of times they would just kind of clump these together. So the feast itself was 7 days. But there was an eighth day that was added as what was known as a holy convocation. Whatever that's worth, John 7 and 2 also tells us, without a doubt, now the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles was at hand. So that gives us the context. So in John 7 and 2 begins the Feast of Tabernacles. It was an 8-day feast. And as we read this morning, it said in the middle of it, that's when Jesus went. And then now John 7 and 37 tells us that it was the last day, the great day of the feast. That seventh day of the feast was known as the great day of the feast, because that's when everything came to a culmination. And I'll kind of tell you the story here in a little bit and you'll get the idea. But all of these events occurred within an 8-day period. So the woman caught in adultery, what Terry taught us this morning about the water of life, all of these events occurred in a very, very close time frame. So I'm very glad that John was able to give us these dates, these times, this context. So Leviticus, the 23rd chapter, I won't read you the entire passage, but anytime you have a question about the Feast of the Lord, whether it's Passover or trumpets or whatever, this is where you need to start, is Leviticus chapter 23. And that is where the directives are given for these seven feasts of the Lord. And so we get to talking at the end here about the Feast of Tabernacles or the Feast of Booths, or as it's sometimes referred to. It was to be on the 15th day of the seventh month. That's when it started. The 15th day of the seventh month. That does not mean July 15th. That is not what that means. The Jews were on a completely, totally different calendar. It was based off of cycles of the moon. Had nothing to do with that. The calendar changed from year to year. It's very, very, very confusing. But this is not July 15th. It was the 15th day of the seventh month of this old calendar that they went off of. Sometime in the fall. There was to be 7 days of offerings, plus an eighth day that was known as a holy convocation. And so a holy convocation was a very solemn day. It was a very solemn and quiet day of worship. So when those people ran into the temple, dragging that woman up there with them, saying we caught her in the act of adultery, not only was that just disruptive in the temple, that was done, if my timing is correct, on this eighth day. It was done on the day of the holy convocation. So as far as just being completely disruptive and out of line, bad as it was also on the last day, this eighth day, they had no right to do that. So 7 days of offering. This was a very joyous and happy occasion. The Feast of Tabernacles was probably the most joyous of all the feasts. It was a big deal. It was the third and final feast where the men were required to go to Jerusalem. And when they got to the temple, it was just a good time. It was a very joyous. It was a time of harvest, and everybody was happy. And the first day and the second day, it built a little more. And the third day, until it got all the way to that seventh day, and that's why they called that seventh day, was the great day of the feast. That's what John refers to as the great day of the feast. And then the eighth day would go back to being a very solemn day of remembrance and worship and thanksgiving unto God. A couple words you need to be familiar with. I don't really know how to pronounce that. L-U-L-A-V. That is a Hebrew word, but it means palm branch. And so when you read about the waving before the priest, you had to wave a palm branch on one of the days before the priest. And I'll show you a picture of what that looks like, or at least what it looks like today. In Leviticus 23 and 30, I will read this passage too, because this is where a lot of this comes from. So as they're describing the edicts and the commands for this Feast of Tabernacles, you shall take for yourselves on the first day the fruit of beautiful trees, branches of palm trees, the boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. So on that first day, you had to take those four elements. Now, this fruit of beautiful trees, over the years, up until today now, has somehow been accepted to be what's called a citron. And I don't even know what that is. I have no personal experience of a citron. It's kind of a citrusy looking fruit. It looks like an overgrown lemon to me. But in those days, I guess that was the common citrus fruit. And so this fruit of beautiful trees, for practical purposes, is the citron. And they would take these other three and they would wind them together and make like a palm leaf fan almost. And that L-U-L-A-V, the lulav, or however you would pronounce that, looks something like that. And that's what it looks like today anyway. And so they'll take those three plants and they kind of bind them together and to make kind of a fan. And that goes in the right hand. And that is the overgrown lemon-looking citron thing. They held it in their left hand when they did their sacrifices. So you would come up to this priest here, and you would wave it. And that was called the waving of the lulav, or however you pronounce that word. Okay. So this morning, Terry talked about the water. And so we're going to talk a little bit about the water ceremony. It's not biblical. It's something that the rabbis and the teachings of the moral traditions had added to it. But it involved this when they did the water ceremony. So going back to Leviticus 23 now. You also have what are called booths or tabernacles. Okay, huts might be what I would call it if I looked at it. Something like this. I don't know exactly. You could make them. There's a lot of different regulations now. I tell you what, when you start talking about Jewish traditions and It is. You think the tax code is difficult? Try picking up some of the stuff. You can have this, but not this. You can have so much light, but it has to have so much sunlight, so much moonlight. It is very technical for the Orthodox Jews, because some still do this. And so you would build yourself a little hut, and you would live inside this booth or this tabernacle for the 7 days of the proper feast. And you're supposed to do that as a remembrance of what it was like when God brought the children of Israel out through the wilderness. And so it's kind of like a camping trip, to remember what it's like and what the people, your forefathers, went through. Kind of a neat idea. Leviticus 23 and 42, you shall dwell in booths, or tabernacles, or huts, for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So all those years they were wandering outside of Egypt, out of the conditions and the elements and the rain and the sleet and the hail and whatever they had to go through, they had to find something. They had to find some type of cover. And so they would build themselves, I suppose, some kind of structure. And so God said, I want the people to remember that, that they don't forget that this is what the people went through. And so they would live in these booths. And as I understand it, I remember Landry had the lesson not too long ago. He found some pictures of it. They build them on top of the walls. They build them on top of the houses. They might be in the streets. But even today, Orthodox Jews still celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Booths, at least this part, by living in these huts. Back in Genesis 33 and 17, I think there's even a precursor to that. Right? Remember Jacob and Esau? Jacob suckered Esau out of his birthright. They got bad. They split up. It wasn't too much longer. They came back together again, and Jacob looked out, and he saw Esau with a whole bunch of big bad dudes with him. And Jacob's thinking to himself, this is about to get ugly. And so they have a big conversation. So Jacob and Esau get together. And they come to terms, and they don't fight or anything. They kind of make amends. But it says that Jacob journeyed to Succoth, S-U-C-C-O-T-H, built himself a house and made booths for his livestock. Therefore, the name of the place is called S-U-C-C-O-T-H, Succoth. In Hebrew, it becomes S-U-K-K-O-T. And that is what the Jews refer to the Feast of Tabernacles as today. So S-U-K-K-O-T, that is the Feast of Tabernacles if you are a 21st century Jew. That's what that means. And so I guess it goes all the way back to Jacob and Esau. That word actually means booths, tabernacles, huts. I don't know what other word or synonym I could use, but it's just those little outcroppings that you would build out of sticks and stones and whatever you could find to try to have protection. So for years people followed it, and then for years people didn't follow it. And so then we get to the time of Nehemiah. Nehemiah is writing now, and the people are trying to get their lives back together. It says, now all the people gathered together as one man, this is Nehemiah 8 and 1, in the open square that was in front of the water gate, and they told Ezra the scribe to bring the book of the law of Moses, which the Lord had commanded Israel. So for hundreds of years, and we've already been through some deportations and whatnot, people have forgotten the law. They don't have any idea what's going on with the law. And so he brought it back, and here we go. Ezra the priest brought the law before the assembly of men and women and all who could hear within with understanding on the first day of the seventh month. So now Nehemiah tells us that Ezra the scribe gets up and he begins to teach, and he begins to read from the law of Moses. In fact, I think this is also the only mention of the word pulpit. And it talks about how Ezra got up on a pulpit on a wooden platform and began to read the law of Moses. And all of a sudden they got to this part about this Feast of Tabernacles. And did you notice, let me go back, I didn't get the verse. This was on, there it is. He was on the first day of the seventh month. So that's the month that the Feast of Tabernacles was supposed to occur on. And so then he starts reading it. And they found written in the law which the Lord had commanded by Moses that the children of Israel should dwell in booths during the feast of the seventh month. And everybody went, oh, hold on. This is the seventh month. And they realized that they were supposed to be doing something. So the reading started the first day. They had 2 weeks to get this festival back in running order. So I don't know if it was exactly like it was supposed to do, but Ezra got it going, and sure enough, they celebrated the Feast of Tabernacles during that month. He said, go out to the mountains and bring olive branches, branches of oil trees, myrtle branches, palm branches, and branches of leafy trees to make booths as it is written. So that as it is written, that I'm referring back to Leviticus. That's what he's talking about. Now, how it turned into olive branches, I don't know. Though we have olive branches, oil trees, myrtle branches, palm trees, but that he's referring back to the writings in Leviticus. Then the people went out and brought them and made themselves booths, each one on the roof of his house. And so they celebrated the Feast of Tabernacles. As with all of the feasts of the Lord, remember there's seven of them. Leviticus 23 talks about the seven feasts. There are obvious connections and shadows of the coming Messiah. And we need to understand that everything points to Jesus. If you don't have this verse marked from our earlier studies, I sure wish you would do it. It is Colossians chapter 2, verse 16. And if you have any questions about Passover, or the Feast of Trumpets, or the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Day of Atonement, any of those seven feasts, I wish you would mark Colossians 2 and 16, because this is the verse. Paul writes and says, so let no one judge you in food or in drink, or regarding a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath, which are a shadow of things to come, but the substance is of Christ. And that explains it. We're not to be judged whether or not we partake of the Passover or the Feast of Trumpets. I suppose if you wanted to, I guess you could. But I mean, there's no decree, there's nothing that forces us to do that. Because all of that was a shadow of things to come. It was a shadow of the substance which is of Christ. And now that we have Christ and we have the Messiah has come to us, we don't need to worry about Passover and Sabbath and food restrictions, whether we can eat pork or crab. All of that is gone. We don't have to worry about that because that was all pointing towards Jesus. Okay? So everything, every feast, there are obvious shadows and connections of the coming Messiah. And the Feast of Tabernacles is no different. Now we get to John 8 and 12. I added a couple of footnotes up here just to kind of make it a little simpler. Then Jesus spoke to them again, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. So check your footnotes here. Then. Okay, number one, what does he mean when he says then? Well, John's giving things chronologically. That is after the woman and the adultery discussion. And the Bible tells us that it was very early in the morning. So very early, Jesus went to the temple. He was teaching. They dragged the woman in, and they have the whole discussion about adultery and the woman. And Jesus just doesn't do anything. He stoops down. He writes something. He doesn't say any word. And then finally, he who has without sin, let him cast the first stone. They all turn and walk off. That's when, after this, because it's chronological, then, after all this has occurred, Jesus spoke to them. Okay, who is them? Well, the them is back to the very scribes and Pharisees in the temple that he'd already been discussing things with. Now, I tried to go back and count. I counted, I think, four separate times that Jesus is talking to them during the course of this week. So that is who he is discussing things with. And sometimes they don't like what he has to say. Okay? Again, so these scribes and Pharisees, there's been 3 days, four separate attempts as I can tell, but over the course of 3 days in John 7 and John 8 that he has been teaching them again and again and again. And now he makes a statement that to us we go, that's pretty cool. I am the light of the world. And so we think about light and darkness, that's true. We think about walking in the light as opposed to walking in the darkness. Paul uses that expression in the book of Ephesians. We can read about that in the light and the darkness. But I believe to those scribes and Pharisees, being that this was the Feast of Tabernacles, that had even more meaning. Let me tell you about some of the Jewish customs of tabernacles. There's the Jewish word. I'm just going to say tabernacles. Okay, we had the booths. Okay, that was the lulav. That was the deal they took out and bound up the the wave, the different branches of the tree. And then Terry talked this morning about the water ceremony. Okay? So just real quick, the water ceremony again. On the first day, the priest went down to the pool of Siloam and they got a big old pitcher of water. And they would come back and they would walk around the altar and they would dump that water out as an offering to God. Now, add this part with it too. Okay? Those people had those branches and the fans made out of the palm branches. And as the priest would walk to get it, they were on the side of the road like a parade, waving those branches around. That's what they do. They'd wave those branches. And they'd go down and get the water. They'd come and come back. And they would wave those branches some more. And they'd dump the water out. And they did that for 6 days. On the seventh day, the priest would go get the water. See if this kind of reminds you of Jericho. They would go down. They'd get that water. They'd come back to the altar. Everybody's waving. It's a big old party now. They would circle the altar seven times. And then they'd dump the water. Kind of like they did in Jericho. So I don't know where that custom came from. But it's pretty likely that that's what was going on during the time of Jesus. And so I just can't help but think. They're sitting there walking around this big old party. That's why I was on day seven. It was the last day of the great feast. That's what they call the great feast, was the day where they walked around it seven times. And as soon as the priest dumps that water out, what's Jesus do from the temple? He hollers, right? He cries out, "I am the living water. If you're thirsty, come to me." And I'm sure that didn't sit too well with those scribes and those priests and those Pharisees. They probably didn't like Jesus over there grandstanding and upstaging their water ceremony. Okay? But then they had a second ceremony that also went with it. It was known as the lighting of the temple. Okay? So remember, you got water and light. For whatever reason, those are the two things that are really important. On the first day of the feast, they would bring in these big old candlestick-looking things. And the people that saw, you know, eyewitnesses, estimate 75 feet tall. I want you to think about how tall that is. 75 feet. That'd be what, like a 7-story building maybe? It's a pretty good size. They had four of them. And then they would have these guys come up on ladders and climb up to the top of it. And they would have the garments of the priest, the old linens. They'd use them as wicks. And somebody had to climb up to the top of that and light it. And those things would burn all night long. Okay? So Jesus is going to take the customs of both the water ceremony and the lighting of the temple to help make his claim to being Messiah. Okay? So here we go again. On the last day, the great day of the feast, that's day seven, by the way, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, "If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water." So you got to know, when Jesus stood up and said, "You want real water if you're thirsty, come unto me," you got to know he's already upset some people. Okay? This is an obvious reference to the water ceremony that was being performed by the priest at the Feast of Tabernacles. Here's the lighting of the temple. So now let's talk about the second phase. It started during the time of the second temple. I don't know why it started or who started it, but it did. It was tied very closely to this water ceremony. And according to tradition, it was very symbolic of the Shekinah light. And what the Shekinah light was this is a picture of the tabernacle. Remember how they would have a flame that would take them through the night? And this was showing the presence of God. And we read about this later in the temple, that the presence of God was shown there. It'd be on top of the ark. It would be a light or a fire. That was called the Shekinah light. That showed and represented the glory of God. So here's an author I found named David Barron. He says, at the conclusion of the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, the worshipers congregated the court of the women that was outside. So men, women, anyone could go into that area. This is where a great illumination took place. Four huge golden lamps or candelabras were there, each with four golden bowls against which rested four ladders. Four youths of priestly descent ascended these with large pitchers of oil from which they filled each bowl. The old worn breeches and girdles of the priests served for wicks for these lamps. So great and brilliant was the light that, according to a saying, there was not a court in Jerusalem that was not lit up by the light of the house of water point. So remember, the temple's up on a hill, right? And so now we're 75 feet tall. And somebody had to climb up those ladders and dump the oil in there and then light this thing
And I got a couple pictures. There's kind of an artist rendition of it. They would have these great big old tall candlesticks. You would dump the oil and then you would light it and it would just burn fire. You could see it for miles and miles and miles. I would not want to have to be the guy that climbed up that and shimmied up them ladders to pour the oil. Somebody had to do it though. Actually, four of them had to do it, one for each of the candlesticks. Now this is a real good picture I found. This is kind of a real good representation. This is, you know, computer generated. But can you probably picture yourself in Jerusalem during the time of the Feast of Tabernacles and imagine the temple lit up like that with those 75 foot, and you could see it for miles and miles and miles around. Anyone in town could look up and see the lights of the temple. And this happened for 7 days. 7 days, 7 nights, they would burn off those candles. And then they would extinguish them on the 8th day. So of the morning of the 8th day, the candles were extinguished. Fires were lit for the first 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacles. And then remember the 8th day. This is the solemn day of worship that concluded the Feast of Tabernacles. So these fires have been going every night. And the Bible tells us that Jesus, on the day after the great day of the feast, after saying, "I am the water," on the 8th day, this day of solemn remembrance, Jesus comes in early in the morning, John 8:2 tells us. Early in the morning, he came again into the temple. Well, this would be the 8th day. And now we have the woman that's brought in with the adultery. We have that whole situation. And then we get to John 8:12 and says, oh, by the way, then again, he spoke to them. Or then Jesus spoke to them again. He comes back to the scribes and Pharisees who have just been through 7 days of this fire lighting ceremony, lighting up the temple, and almost in an underhanded, snide way says, "I am the light of the world. By the way, you like that light you've been lighting? I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life." You see why they hated Jesus? He took every part of their worship. He was taking over the Feast of Tabernacles. All of these customs, Jesus took over all of them. The water, he said, "Oh, really, I'm the water." And they had a lighting ceremony. He said, "Oh, really, I'm the light." No matter what the Jews did, Jesus said, "Whatever you're doing is a fulfillment in me." And that's why the Jews hated him. And as soon as he said that, the rest of chapter 8 is an argument between Jesus and the scribes and the Pharisees going back and forth because Jesus has irritated and aggravated these scribes and Pharisees to no end because now he has claimed to be the light of the world. This is an obvious reference to the lighting of the temple during the Feast of Tabernacles when he says, "I am the light of the world." But now it all ties together in a nice, pretty bow for us. Go back to Matthew chapter 4. When Jesus comes on the scene, Matthew chapter 4, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, "The people who sat in darkness have seen a great light, and upon those who sat in the region and shadow of death, light has dawned." And so now we start talking about prophecies in Isaiah. I believe that's Isaiah 9:2, if I remember correctly. Now we're pulling up prophecies of Isaiah that talk about the light, that the Messiah was going to be the light. And now Jesus has said, "I am the light of the world." And he's tied it together with the Feast of Tabernacles, which takes us all the way back to Jacob. And everything starts fitting together. All the way back to when God created the heavens and the earth. He said, "Let there be light." And there's water and there's light. And those two follow a trend throughout the Bible. There's that in Isaiah 9:2. "The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. And those who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death, upon them a light is shining." Also, Paul uses the light in darkness in his teachings. We find it throughout the Bible. I told you I was going to finish in Revelation. There you go. Have you ever thought about the tabernacles and the Feast of Tabernacles throughout the book of Revelation? Revelation 21:3. "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men. And he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God." Very reminiscent of what we've been studying right now. The tabernacle of God is with men. So now we're using Jesus, we're using this word tabernacle as a reference to Jesus himself, who's going to live with us and be bound with us. Revelation 21 and 6, and he said to me, it is done. I'm the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give of the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts. And now we've got the water of life. Revelation 22 and 1, and he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and the Lamb. And finally, Revelation 22 and 5, and there shall be no light there. For they need no lamp nor light of the sun, for the Lord God gives them light. And so he started in Genesis with water and with light. And guess what we finished with in the last chapter of Revelation? The river of water, and the God is the light. And this whole concept really has a lot of imagery taken from the Feast of Tabernacles. So I think when he said that to those scribes and Pharisees, yeah, not only was it an awesome picture of I'm the light of the world, I think it had a whole lot more meaning to it. And that's probably why they got so irritated with Jesus and decided it was time to get rid of this guy. Because he was destroying what they thought was destroying the Jewish religion. And what they didn't understand was he was fulfilling the religion. And that's where they couldn't quite make the distinction. So there's my remarks for this evening. We'd never like to close out a song of invitation. If we can help you at any time, just stand ready to assist.